Chapter 3. Miss Joy, Mr. and Mrs. Joy, Mr. Butter. Mr. B, what spirits that girl has, Mrs. Joy. Mr. J, she's a sunshine in a house, Butter, a regular sunshine. When Mrs. J hears in a bad humor, I. Dot dot, Mrs. J, don't talk nonsense, Mr. Joy. Mrs. B, there's a hop, skip, and jump for you. Why, it beats Elsler. Upon my conscience it does. It's her 14th quadrille too. There she goes. She's a jewel of a girl, though I say it that shouldn't. Mrs. J, laughing, why don't you marry her, Butter? Shall I speak to her? I dare say she'd have you. You're not so very old. Mr. B, don't aggravate me, Mrs. J. You know when I lost my heart in the year 1817 at the opening of Waterloo Bridge, to a young lady who wouldn't have me, and left me to die in despair, and married Joy, of the Stock Exchange. Mrs. J, get away, you foolish old creature.
Mr. Joy looks on in ecstasies at Miss Joy's agility. Lady Jane Ranville, of Baker Street, pronounces her to be an exceedingly forward person. Captain Dobbs likes a girl who has plenty of go in her, and as for Fred Sparks, he is over head and ears in love with her.
Mr. Ranville, Ranville and Jack Hubbard. This is Miss Ranville, Ranville's brother, Mr. Ranville, Ranville, of the Foreign Office, faithfully designed as he was playing at whist in the card room. Talleyrand used to play at whist at the Travelers. That is why Ranville, Ranville indulges in that diplomatic recreation. It is not his fault, if he be not the greatest man in the room. If you speak to him, he smiles sternly, and answers in monosyllables he would rather die than commit himself. He never has committed himself in his life. He was the first at school, and distinguished at Oxford. He is growing prematurely bald now, like Canning, and is quite proud of it. He rides in St. James Park of a morning before breakfast. He dockets his tailor's bills, and nicks off his dinner notes in diplomatic paragraphs, and keeps presses of them all. If he ever makes a joke, it is a quotation from Horace, like Sir Robert Peel. The only relaxation he permits himself is to read Thucydides in the holidays. Everybody asks him out to dinner, on account of his brass buttons with the Queen's cipher, and to have the air of being well with the Foreign Office. Here I dine, he says solemnly, I think it is my duty, to go to evening parties. That is why he is here. He never dances, never sups, never drinks. He has gruel when he goes home to bed. I think it is in his brains. He is such an ass and so respectable, that one wonders he has not succeeded in the world, and yet somehow they laugh at him, and you and I shall be ministers, as soon as he will. Yonder, making believe to look over the print books, is that merry rogue, Jack Hubbard. See how jovial he looks. He is the life and soul of every party, and his impromptu singing after supper will make you die of laughing. He is meditating an impromptu now, and at the same time thinking about a bill that is coming due next Thursday. Happy dog! Mrs. Trotter, Miss Trotter, Miss Toady, Lord Methuselah. Dear Emma Trotter has been silent, and rather ill-humored all the evening until now her pretty face lights up with smiles. Cannot you guess why? Pity the simple and affectionate creature. Lord Methuselah has not arrived until this moment. And see how the artless girl steps forward to greet him. In the midst of all the selfishness and turmoil of the world, how charming it is to find virgin hearts quite unsullied, and to look on at little romantic pictures of mutual love. Lord Methuselah, though you know his age by the peerage, though he is old, wigged, gouty, rouged, wicked, has lighted up a pure flame in that gentle bosom. There was a talk about Tom Willoughby last year. And then, for a time, young Hobbick, Sir John Hobbick's youngest son, seemed the favored man. But Emma never knew her mind until she met the dear creature before you in a Rhine steamboat. Why are you so late, Edward? Says she. Dear artless child. Her mother looks on with tender satisfaction. One can appreciate the joys of such an admirable parent. Look at them. Says Miss Toady.
vow and protest they are the handsomest couple in the room. Methuselah's grandchildren are rather jealous and angry, and Madame Celarion, of the French theater, is furious. But there's no accounting for the mercenary envy of some people, and it is impossible to satisfy everybody. Mr. Bomrus, Mr. Grigg, Mr. Flinders. Those three young men are described in a twinkling. Captain Grigg of the Heavies, Mr. Bomrus, the handsome young man, Tom Flinders, Flinders he now calls himself, the fat gentleman who dresses after Bomrus. Bomrus is in the treasury. He has a salary of £80 a year, on which he maintains the best cab and horses of the season, and out of which he pays 70 guineas merely for his subscriptions to clubs. He hunts in Leicestershire, where great men mount him. He is a prodigious favorite behind the scenes at the theaters. You may get glimpses of him at Richmond, with all sorts of pink bonnets, and he is the sworn friend of half the most famous rows about town, such as Old Methuselah, Lord Billigut, Lord Tarquin, and the rest. A respectable race. It is to oblige the former that the good-natured young fellow is here tonight, though it must not be imagined that he gives himself any airs of superiority. Dandy as he is quite affable, and would borrow 10 guineas from any man in the room, in the most jovial way possible. It is neither Beau's birth, which is doubtful, nor his money, which is entirely negative, nor his honesty, which goes along with his money qualification, nor his wit, for he can barely spell, which recommend him to the fashionable world, but a sort of grand seigneur splendor and dandified genius quoi, which make the man he is of him. The way in which his boots and gloves fit him is a wonder which no other man can achieve, and though he is not an atom of principle, it must be confessed that he invented the tagliani shirt. When I see these magnificent dandies yawning out of heights, or caracoling in the park on shining chargers, I like to think that Brummel was the greatest of them all, and that Brummel's father was a footman. Flinders is Bomrus's toady. Lends him money. Buys horses through his recommendation. Dresses after him. Clings to him in Pall Mall, and on the steps of the club. And talks about Beau in all societies. It is his drag which carries down Beau's friends to the Derby, and his checks pay for dinners to the pink bonnets. I don't believe the Perkinses know what a rogue it is, but fancy him a decent, reputable city man, like his father before him. As for Captain Grigg, what is there to tell about him? He performs the duties of his calling with perfect gravity. He is faultless on parade, excellent across country, amiable when drunk, rather slow when sober. He has not two ideas, and is a most good-natured, irreproachable, gallant, and stupid young officer. Cavalier Soul. This is my friend Bob Healy, performing the Cavalier Soul in a quadrille. Remark the good-humored pleasure depicted in his countenance. Has he any secret grief? Has he a pain anywhere? No, dear Miss Jones, he is dancing like a true Briton, and with all the charming gaiety and abandon of our race. When Canaillard performs that Cavalier Soul operation, does he flinch? No. He puts on his most vain queer look, he sticks his thumbs into the armholes of his waistcoat, and advances, retreats, pirouettes, and otherwise gambados, as though to say, Regard moi, O monde! Venice, O femmes, Venice war dancer Canaillard. When de Bobwitz executes the same measure, he does it with smiling agility and graceful ease. But poor Healy, if he were advancing to a dentist, his face would not be more cheerful. All the eyes of the room are upon him, he thinks, and he thinks he looks like a fool. Upon my word, if you press the point with me, dear Miss Jones, I think he is not very far from right. I think that, while Frenchmen and Germans may dance, as it is their nature to do, there is a natural dignity about us Britons, which debars us from that enjoyment. I am rather of the Turkish opinion, that this should be done for us. I think. Goodbye, you envious old fox and the grapes, says Miss Jones, and the next moment I see her whirling by in a polka with Tom Tozer, at a pace which makes me shrink back with terror into the little boudoir. M. Canaillard, Chevalier of the Legion of Honor. Lieutenant Baron de Bobwitz. Canaillard. Oh, says Anglis. Quells arms, mon dieu. Camille Santabils, Camille's dancing. Bobwitz. See son de beau arms Burton. Point de tenu militer, mace de grand scalards. Sig les aves stands ma compagnie de la garde, gen fierai de bon soldats. Canaillard. Estil beat, said Allemand. Les grands hommes ni font pas toujours de bon soldats, monsieur. Il me semble que les soldats de France qui sont de ma taille, monsieur, valent un peu mieux. Bobwitz. Vous croyez? Canaillard. Comment. G. La Croix, monsieur? J'en suis sûr. Il me semble, monsieur, que nous l'avons prouvé. Bobwitz impatiently. G. Men vais dancer la polka. Serviteur, monsieur. Canaillard. Buter. He goes and looks at himself in the glass when he is seized by Mrs. Perkins for the polka. The boudoir. Mr. Smith, Mr. Brown, Miss Bustleton. Mr. Brown. You poke, Miss Bustleton? I'm so delighted. Miss Bustleton. Smiles and prepares to rise. Mr. Smith. The puppy. Poor Smith don't poke. Grand polka. Though a quadrille seems to me as dreary as a funeral, yet to look at a polka, I own, is pleasant. See. Brown and Emily Bustleton are whirling round as light as two pigeons over a dovecot. Tozer, with that wicked whisking little Jones, spins along as merrily as a May Day sweep. Miss Joy is the partner of the happy Fred Sparks, and even Miss Ranville is pleased, for the faultless Captain Grig is toe and heel with her. Bomerus, with rather a nonchalant air, takes a turn with Miss Trotter, at which Lord Methuselah's wrinkled chops quiver uneasily. See how the big Baron de Bobwitz spins lightly and gravely and gracefully round, and lo, the Frenchman staggering under the weight of Miss Bunyan, who tramps and kicks like a young cart horse. But the most awful sight which met my view in this dance was the unfortunate Miss Little, to whom fate had assigned the mulligan as a partner. Like a pavid kid in the talons of an eagle, that young creature trembled in his huge Milesian grasp. Disdaining the recognized form of the dance, the Irish chieftain accommodated the music to the dance of his own green land, and performed a double shuffle jig, carrying Miss Little along with him. Miss Ranville and her captain shrank back amazed. Miss Trotter scurried out of his way into the protection of the astonished Lord Methuselah. Fred Sparks could hardly move for laughing. While, on the contrary, Miss Joy was quite in pain for poor Sophie Little. As Canaillard and the poetess came up, the mulligan, in the height of his enthusiasm, lunged out a kick which sent Miss Bunyan howling, and concluded with a tremendous hurroo. A war cry which caused every Saxon heart to shudder and quail. Oh, that the earth would open, and kindly take me in, I exclaimed mentally, and slunk off into the lower regions, where by this time half the company were at supper. The supper. The supper is going on behind the screen. There is no need to draw the supper. We all know that sort of transaction. The squabbling, and gobbling, and popping of champagne, the smell of musk and lobster salad, the dowagers jumping away at plates of raised pie, the young lassies nibbling at little titbits, which the dexterous young gentlemen procure. Three large men, like doctors of divinity, wait behind the table, and furnish everything that appetite can ask for. I never, for my part, can eat any supper for wondering at those men. I believe if you were to ask them for mashed turnips, or a slice of crocodile, those astonishing people would serve you. What a contempt they must have for the guddling crowd to whom they minister those solemn pastry cook's men. How they must hate jellies, and game pies, and champagne, in their hearts. How they must scorn my poor friend Grunzel behind the screen, who is sucking at a bottle. This disguised greengrocer is a very well-known character in the neighborhood of Pocklington Square. He waits at the parties of the gentry in the neighborhood, and though, of course, despised in families where a footman is kept, is a person of much importance in female establishments. Miss Jonas always employs him at her parties, and says to her page, Vincent, send the butler, or send Despero to me, by which name she chooses to designate G.G. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.